Are you better?
What?
This seems to be becoming a habit with us, Mr. Pearson. Please, don't move. The floor is covered with smashed crockery. You can't possibly move without making a noise. And I fancy they are outside.
They? Oh, God.
Far from it, Mr. Pearson.
The Martians? But that wasn't the heat ray. I didn't hear... We're still inside the house, aren't we?
Don't move.
I can see light. Where's the light coming from, not the windows?
There's a hole in the wall, and the windows are all smashed.
Then why can't I see through them? What happened? A cylinder? Another shot from Mars? It struck this house. And we're buried under the ruins.
God have mercy upon us.
Listen. They're out there.
Oh. Oh.
Outside there began a metallic hammering. Then, after a quiet interval, a sound like the hissing of an engine. These noises continued intermittently, and seemed, if anything, to increase in number as time wore on. For many hours we must have crouched there, silent and shivering, until our tired attention failed. I'm inclined to believe we must have spent the greater portion of a day asleep. But my hunger became so insistent it moved me to wakefulness. The thudding vibration caused the plaster to detach and left a vertical slit in the debris. By raising myself cautiously across a beam, I was able to see out of this gap.
A vast change, I imagine, Mr. Pearson.
A vast change indeed. Last night this was a quiet suburban roadway. The buildings have practically vanished, completely pulverized.
The cylinder. Can you see the cylinder?
Just about. The pit's already larger than the one at Woking. It's like mud under the blow of a hammer. I suppose the front portion of this house must have been destroyed completely. Probably the whole ground floor.
And now, we're buried beneath soil and ruins, interred without any of the proper ceremony.
We're not actually dead.
Yet. But we are closed in by tons of earth on every side.
Not every side.
Oh, then we can escape.
Unfortunately, no. The side that's clear contains the cylinder.
And we are already in our grave. Simply waiting to die.
Not necessarily. All we have to do is wait until they're done with this pit. We just need patience.
And food.
Yes. I can see one of the machines, but I think it's been deserted by its occupant.
You think?
I hope. Never seen one like this before. It's a different design.
Why should you care about such things when our lives are already forfeit?
Oh, be quiet. Some kind of excavating machine, I think. It's like a metallic spider. Five-jointed, agile legs and an extraordinary number of jointed levers, bars and tentacles. And no wheels anywhere. Surely they must know about the wheel.
Satan's motives are his own, and his ingenuity is boundless.
If you can't say anything constructive, Reverend, then don't say anything at all. I can see some Martians crawling about.
Unholy creatures.
They move so slowly and painfully. Even on the common, I didn't see them this close. About 4 feet in diameter, a V-shaped mouth like a fleshy beak. Pointed upper lip, no brow ridges, chin or nostril. I wonder if they even have a sense of smell. Do they sleep? Probably not. No extensive muscular mechanism to recuperate. A wedge-like lower lip with whip-like tentacles in bunches. Interesting how its mouth keeps quivering and that breathing. The atmosphere must be strange to it. And the greater gravitational energy of the Earth evidently accounts for the heaviness and painfulness of their movements. Without their machines, they're almost crippled.
They're the most unearthly creatures it's possible to conceive.
That, Reverend, I won't argue with. Some single tight tympanic surface at the back of this head or body. I imagine the greater part of this structure is the brain, sending nerves to the eyes, ear and tentacles. I wonder what their digestive apparatus looks like. I mean, they're almost entirely heads. They don't wear any clothing, so they must be less sensible of changes of temperature than we are. No entrails that I can see. And no sex organs?
Mr. Pearson, please.
The Martians must be absolutely without sex. Probably they reproduce asexually, bud off like lily bulbs or the freshwater polyp. Perhaps this is how humanity will eventually evolve.
Blasphemy!
We're just in the beginning of the evolution the Martians have worked out, Reverend. They've become mere brains.
As the days wore on, my companions' utter carelessness of any consideration so intensified our distress and danger that I had to resort to threats to quiet him. That brought him to reason for a time, but he was one of those weak creatures, void of pride, full of shifty cunning, who faced neither God nor man, not even themselves. And while we fought out our dark, dim contest of whispers, snatched food and drink, outside in the pitiless sunlight of that terrible June was the strange wonder, the unfamiliar routine of the Martians in the pit.
Reinforcements are arriving. Three of them, I think.
Their name is Legion, but they are many.
What are they here for, I wonder? Why come back to the pit?
What was that? What was that?
People. People are falling from the machines.
That hellish noise, what on earth is it?
It's the call to feed.
They're eating those people.
Not eating them. It's the blood they want. That's why they've allowed so many of us to live this long. They digest human blood. When you look at it from a purely scientific perspective, I suppose that the physiological advantages are undeniable. I mean, think of the tremendous waste of human time and energy occasioned by the digestive process.
Your science has no morality, sir.
I'm simply trying to see things from the Martians' point of view.
And why should you wish to do so?
Well, to defeat them, of course.
How do you propose to defeat them when we're trapped down here, slowly starving to death?
If the Martians make the pit nothing more than a temporary encampment, they might not consider it necessary to guard it. We might have a chance to escape. Or we might dig our way out.
Even if we could, the chances of our emerging within sight of some sentinel seems to me rather too great. I'm afraid you'd have to do all the digging yourself, Pearson. I'm afraid I am far too weak.
I discovered a hatchet and spent some hours digging as silently as possible. But when I'd made a hole about a couple of feet deep, the loose earth collapsed noisily, and I did not dare continue. I lost heart, and lay down on the scullery floor for a long time, having no spirit even to move. After that, I abandoned altogether the idea of escaping by excavation. On the fourth or fifth night, I heard a sound like heavy guns. It was very late, and the moon was shining brightly. The Martians had taken away the excavating machine, and save for a fighting machine that stood on the bank of the pit, the place was deserted. It was on the sixth day of our imprisonment that I found myself alone.
Reverend! Reverend!
What the hell are you doing?
Leave me alone.
That wine's all we've got to drink.
Leave me be, blasphemer.
Give me that. Well, that's just marvellous.
What are you going to do?
What am I going to do? I'm going to do what I always do. Approach the problem scientifically. I'm going to divide what remains of our food into rations, enough to last us 10 days.
I'm just so hungry.
Well, you're not eating any more today, Reverend, and neither am I.
What are we going to drink now?
There's a rainwater pump, that'll have to do.
This is unendurable.
Will you be quiet?
I can be silent no longer.
Are you insane?
It is just, O God, it is just. On me and mine be the punishment laid.
Shut up.
We have sinned, we have fallen short. The poor were trodden in the dust, and I held my peace.
Hold it now.
I preached acceptable folly when I should have stood up and called upon them to repent.
Shut up, or I will shut you up.
I have been still too long, and now I must bear my witness. Woe unto this unfaithful city! Woe to the inhabitants of the earth by reason of the other voices of the trumpet!
For God's sake, man!
The word of the Lord is upon me! Ah, they have me! The creatures have me!
Give me your hand, I'll try to pull you free.
No, no, I must bear my witness! It has been too long enough!
Oh, my God. You poor mad fool. I crept back to the coal cellar, shut the door, and began to cover myself up as much as I could in the darkness.
Damn you. Why did you have to... Damn you!
What? Oh, God. They're looking for me. The creature came into the scullery no more, but I lay all the next day in the close darkness, buried among coals and firewood, not daring even to crawl out for the drink for which I craved. It was the 11th day before I ventured into the pantry. Every scrap of food had gone. I thought I had become deaf, for the noises of movement I had been accustomed to hearing from the pit had ceased absolutely. I didn't feel strong enough to crawl to the peephole and check. On the 12th day, my throat was so painful that I took the chance of alarming the Martians by drinking a cup of glassfuls of blackened and tainted rainwater. The light that came into the scullery was no longer grey, but red. To my disordered imagination, it seemed the colour of blood. The fronds of this strange red weed had grown across the hole in the wall, turning the half-light of the place into a crimson-coloured obscurity. The pit was still.
They've gone.
A multitude of crows hopped and fought over the skeletons of the dead the Martians had consumed. There was not a living thing in the pit. Slowly I thrust myself out through the red weed and stood upon the mound of rubble. Then, in a gust of desperate resolution, I scrambled to the top of the mound in which I had been buried so long.
No Martians. No Martians anywhere.
I had not realized what had been happening to the world, had not anticipated this startling vision of unfamiliar things. I found about me the landscape, weird and lurid, of another planet. The Martian weed had turned the trees scarlet and crimson, like an avenue of gigantic blood drops. I was possessed with two ideas, to get some food and to limp as soon and as far as my strength permitted out of this accursed, unearthly region. At Putney, the bridge was almost lost in a tangle of weed. And at Richmond, too, the Thames water poured in a broad and shallow stream across the meadows of Hampton and Twickenham. As the water spread, the weed followed, until the ruined villas of the Thames Valley were for a time lost in this red swamp whose margin I explored. On Putney Common, patches of ground exhibited the devastation of a cyclone. It filled me with indescribable terror to think how swiftly that desolating change had come. The redweed was less abundant, and the tall trees along the lane were free from the red creeper. All this time I saw no human beings, and no sign of the Martians. Perhaps even now they were destroying Berlin or Paris. For a time I believed that mankind had been swept out of existence, and that I stood there alone, the last man alive.
Catherine.
Under cover of a thicket of trees, I went to the edge of Wimbledon Common. There was no redweed to be seen, and as I prowled, hesitating, on the verge of the open, the sun rose, flooding it all with light and vitality.
Stop! Where do you come from?
I came from Mortlake. I was buried near the pit the Martians made about their cylinder. I managed to work my way out and escaped.
Well, there's no food about here. This is all my country, mister. All this hill down to the river and then back to Clapham and up to the edge of the common. Which way are you going?
I don't know. Leatherhead, I think.
There's only food for one here.
Well, that's fine. I've no wish to stop here. I just want to get back to my wife.
Your wife's in Leatherhead?
Perhaps. I doubt it. Look, I've told you, I've been buried in the ruins of a house 13 or 14 days. I don't know what's been happening.
It is you. The man from Woking. I thought you were killed at Weybridge.
It's Essex, isn't it? The artilleryman. How in God's name...
Well, they didn't kill everyone that day. And after they went away, I got off towards Walton across the fields. But... bloody hell.
What?
It's not 16 days altogether, but your hair's gone grey.
I'm not surprised. If you've been through... God!
It's only a rook, Mr. Pearson. You lost a shoe.
Believe me, I was glad to be rid of it. Have you seen any Martians lately?
They've gone away across London. I guess they've got a bigger camp there.
Poor Warwick. I hope he got out in time.
Warwick?
And my brother. I never asked, do you have any family?
Probably not. Not anymore. Have a night all over Hampstead way. The sky's alive with their light. It's like a great city. And in the glare you can see them moving. And the night before last...
What?
It was just a matter of lights. But it was something hovering up in the air.
They built a flying machine.
That's what it looked like to me.
Then it's all over with humanity. If they can do that, they'll simply go around the world one country after another.
Aye, that they will. But it'll relieve things over here a bit. Besides, Mr. Pearson, weren't you satisfied it is up with humanity? I am. We're down. Beat.
Well, I suppose that as long as there are still survivors...
Well, beat. It's all over. They've lost one fighting machine. Just one. They've made their footing good and crippled the British Empire, the greatest power in the world. They walked all over us. And these are only pioneers. They've kept on coming. Nothing's to be done. We're under, Mr. Pearson.
Yes. Yes, perhaps you're right.
This isn't a war between worlds. It never was a war, any more than there's a war between man and ant. Now, follow me, and stay low.
Have you observed any more cylinders coming down?
Well, I've seen none these 5 or 6 days, but I've no doubt they're falling somewhere every night.
Such a long time ago. That first night in the observatory with Ogilvy. Perhaps they haven't sent any more cylinders.
Why wouldn't they?
Well, something wrong with their machinery back on Mars, perhaps. I don't know.
So what if there is? They'll get it right again. And even if there's a delay, how can it alter the end? Men and ants, Mr. Pearson. Men and ants. The ants build their cities, live their lives, have wars, revolutions, until the men want them out of the way, and then they go out of the way. And that's what we are now. Ants!
Edible ants. The Martians view us as a food source.
I know. After Weybridge, I went south. Most of the people were hard at it, squealing and exciting themselves. But I'm not so fond of squealing. I've been in sight of death once or twice, and it's the man who keeps on thinking that comes through. I saw everyone tracking away south, and I was thinking, here's intelligent creatures, I thought. And it seems they want us for food. First, They'll smash us up. Ships, machines, guns, cities, all the order and organization. All that'll go. If we were the size of ants, we might pull through. But we're not. That's the first certainty.
That's not unreasonable.
At present, we're caught as we're wanted. A Martian only has to go a few miles to get a crowd on the run. But they won't keep on doing that. So soon as they've settled all our guns and ships and smashed our railways and done all the things they're doing over there, they'll begin catching us, picking the best and storing us in cages. They haven't even begun on us yet.
You can't seriously mean that, Essex.
Everything that's happened so far is through our not having the sense to keep quiet, worrying them with guns and such foolery, and losing our heads, and rushing off in crowds to where there wasn't any more safety than where we were. They don't want to bother us yet. They're making all the things they couldn't bring with them, getting things ready for the rest of their people. Instead of our rushing about blind, we've got to fix ourselves up according to the new state of affairs. That's how I see it. Cities, nations, civilization, progress. That game's up, Mr. Pearson.
And what is there to live for?
Men like me are going on living for the sake of the breed. I tell you, I'm grim set on living. And if I'm not mistaken, you'll show what insides you've got too before long. We aren't going to be exterminated. And I don't mean to be caught either, and tamed and fattened and bred like a thundering ox.
I trust you have a plan.
Oh, there's lots of things that I've only begun to see clearly these last few days. We men are beat.
So you keep saying. So what are you doing then? What plans have you made?
I've been thinking about the drains.
The drains?
No, we have to invent a sort of life where men can live and breed and be sufficiently secure to bring the children up. I mean for us to live underground. Of course, those who don't know drains think horrible things, but under London are miles and miles of drains. A few days' rain won't leave them sweet and clean. The main ones are big enough and airy enough for anyone. And then there's cellars, vaults, stores.
And the railway tunnels and subways.
You begin to see, Mr. Pearson? We may even be able to keep a watch and run about in the open when the Martians keep away. Play cricket, perhaps. And we form a band. Able-bodied, clean-minded men. We're not going to pick up just any rubbish that drifts in. Weaklings go out again.
As you meant me to go.
I parlayed, didn't I?
We won't quarrel about that.
Those who stop have to obey orders. Able-bodied, clean-minded women we want to. Mothers and teachers. Life is real again. And the useless and cumbersome have to die.
That's a very harsh policy, Essex.
I ought to be willing to die. It's a sort of disloyalty. To live and taint the race. But it's saving our knowledge and adding to it that's the thing. We must make great, safe places down deep and get all the books we can. Not novels and poetry, but science. That's where men like you come in, Mr. Pearson. It may not have to be so much we have to learn before. Just imagine this. 4 or 5 of their fighting machines. Heat rays, right and left. And not a Martian in them. Not a Martian, but men. Men who've learned the way how. Fancy having one of them lovely things with its heat ray wide and free. And then, wong, 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 wong. Man's come back to his own.
For a while, the imaginative daring of the artilleryman and the tone of assurance and courage he assumed completely dominated my mind. I believed unhesitatingly both in his forecast of human destiny and in the practicability of his astonishing scheme. Eventually we arrived at a house on Putney Hill. He'd made his lair in the coal cellar, and when I saw the work he'd spent a week upon, A burrow scarcely 10 yards long, I had my first inkling of the gulf between his dreams and his powers. But I believed in him sufficiently to work with him all that morning until past midday at his digging.
We don't know enough. We've got to learn before we've got a chance. And we've got to live and keep independent while we learn. Those who mean to escape must get ready. I'm getting ready, mind you. It isn't all of us that are made for wild beasts. And that's what it's got to be. That's why I watched you.
You had your doubts about me.
Well, I didn't know it was you, you see. See, I thought you were one of those damn little clerks. They'd be no good. They haven't got any spirit in them. No proud dreams and no proud lust. You know, I've seen hundreds of them. Bit of breakfast in hand, running wild and shining to catch their little season ticket train for fear they'd get dismissed if they didn't. Working at businesses they were afraid to take the trouble to understand. Skedaddling back for fear they wouldn't be in time for dinner. Keeping indoors after dinner for fear of the back street. And then sleeping with their wives they married not because they wanted them, but because they had a bit of money that would make for safety in their own one little miserable skedaddle through the world. Lives insured, and a bit invested for fear of accidents. And on Sundays...
The fear of the hereafter.
As if hell was built for rabbits. The Martians... Well, they're a godsend of that sort. Nice roomy cages, fattening food, careful breeding. And they'll wonder what people did before there were Martians to take care of them. Oh, there's lots that will take things as they are, and lots will be worried by a sort of feeling that it's all wrong. And they ought to be doing something. Whenever things are sold, and a lot of people feel they ought to be doing something, the weak always submit to persecution and the will of the Lord. Now, very likely you've seen the same thing. Those cages will be full of psalms and hymns and piety. The Martians will likely make pets of some of them, train them to do tricks. Well, who knows, maybe even get sentimental over the pet boy who grew up and had to be killed, huh? And some, maybe. They'll train to hunt us.
Impossible, Essex. No human being would ever...
Now, what's the good of going on with such lies? There's men who do it cheerful. Lord help them. If they come after me, let's knock off a bit. I think it's time we reconnoitered from the roof of the house.
As you like, but I think I could dig for a little while longer.
Come on!
Essex, why were you walking about the common instead of digging here?
Taking the air. I was coming back. It's safer by night.
But the work?
Oh, God, it was work, you know.
No Martians to be seen.
Traces of them, though. That bloody red weed covering the river. It swarms up the trees, kills the branches.
The plants are dependent upon water for propagation.
Science word. I was right about you.
I've been wondering about the wheat. At first I thought it might have come here in their cylinders by accident, but now I'm not so sure. The Martians, their world's too far gone in its cooling. And this world is still crowded with life. Crowded only with what they regard as inferior animals. Kill all the plants, you reduce the level of oxygen. Perhaps that's intentional. The black vapour, the black smoke, it could be some sort of delivery method for Martian seed pods. The weed grows from the pod, and then... Perhaps they're deliberately altering the conditions of this world, turning it into a second Mars.
There's some champagne in the cellar.
I don't think we could dig very well on champagne.
Champagne! I'm host today. We have a heavy enough task before us. Let's take a rest and gather strength while we may.
Pursuant to this idea of a holiday, he insisted upon playing cards after we'd eaten. The artilleryman was no longer the energetic regenerator of his species I'd encountered in the morning. He was still optimistic, but it was a less kinetic, a more thoughtful optimism. I took a cigar and went upstairs to look across the London Valley. The northern hills were shrouded in darkness. The fires near Kensington glowed redly. And now and then an orange-red tongue of flame flashed up and vanished in the deep blue night. Nearer, I perceived a strange light, a pale, violet-purple fluorescent glow quivering under the night breeze. For a space I could not understand it, and then I knew it must be the red weed from which this faint irradiation proceeded. With that realization, my dormant sense of wonder, my sense of the proportion of things, awoke again. I looked up to Mars, red and clear, glowing high in the west, and then gazed long and earnestly at the darkness of Hampstead and Highgate. My folly came to me with glaring exaggeration. I seemed a traitor to my wife and to my kind, and I was filled with remorse. I knew I wanted to find Catherine, that my heart ached for her and for the world of men. I resolved to leave this strange, undisciplined dreamer to his drink and gluttony, and go on into London. There was a black dust along the roadway from the bridge onwards, and it grew thicker in Fulham. The streets were horribly quiet. Where there was no black powder, it was curiously like a Sunday in the city, with the closed shops, the houses locked up, and the blinds drawn.
Go away, shoo! Shoo, leave me be!
The farther I penetrated into London, the profounder grew the stillness of expectation. At any time, the destruction that had already singed the northwestern borders of the metropolis, and had annihilated Ealing and Kilburn, might strike among these houses and leave them smoking ruins. Look, boy, at least the mansion survived. You are a boy, aren't you? It doesn't matter. Nothing does now. Nobody's going to live here again. It was near South Kensington that I came upon a strange sight. A bus overturned, and the skeleton of a horse picked clean. How long do you suppose it took the birds to do that, Warwick? Do you like the name Warwick? I used to have a brother called that. What the hell? That came from the north. Come on, Warwick! The voice grew stronger and stronger, though I could see nothing above the housetops on the north side of the park, save a haze of smoke to the northwest. The wailing took possession of me.
Perhaps we could... I don't know, break into the Natural History Museum, find our way up to the summits of the towers. We could see better. What do you think, Warwick? Oh, ridiculous idea.
As we emerged from the top of Baker Street, I saw the hood of the Martian fighting machine giant from which the howling proceeded. It's not moving. What do you suppose is the matter with it? He's going to fall.
Run, boy, run! Did you see that? Did you see that? It just drove straight at that house. What happened to it? Warwick? Warwick?
Oh, no. Alone once more, I clambered among the ruins to see it. The twilight was now so far advanced that the blood with which the Martian's seat was smeared and the gristle that remained of it were almost invisible to me. Its tentacles were smashed and twisted. While that voice sounded and I still had the dog for company, London had still seemed alive. Now there was nothing but this gaunt quiet. London gazed at me spectrally. The windows in the white houses were like the eye sockets of skulls. I hurried through the red weed that choked St. Edmund's Terrace and emerged upon the grass before the rising of the sun. I felt no fear, only a wild, trembling exultation. In another moment, I had scrambled up an earthen rampart and stood upon its crest, looking down into the Martian pit below me, and scattered about it, some in their overturned war machines, were the Martians. They're dead. Dead. Here and there they were scattered, nearly 50 altogether, in that great gulf they had made, overtaken by a death that must have seemed to them as incomprehensible as any death could be. To me also it was incomprehensible. All I knew was that these things that had been alive and so terrible to men were dead. For a moment I believed that God had repented, that the angel of death had slain them in the night.
They're all dead! They're all dead!
I looked at the wide expanse of houses and factories and churches, silent and abandoned, and I thought of the multitudinous hopes and efforts, the innumerable hosts of lives that had gone to build this human reef, and of the swift and ruthless destruction that had hung over it all. When I realized that the shadow had been rolled back, and that this vast dead city might be once more alive and powerful, I felt a wave of emotion that was near akin to tears. The torment was over. The survivors of the people scattered over the country, the thousands who had fled by sea, would begin to return. The pulse of life, growing stronger and stronger, would beat again in the empty streets. Whatever destruction was done, the hand of the destroyer was stayed. At the thought, I extended my hands towards the sky and began thanking God. Oh, Catherine, come back to me. Catherine! 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 Hello, Catherine! No, of course not. No one home. The house is deserted. No one's been here in a very long time. No one escaped but you, Richard. No one. Of course. Stupid. No one would have believed in the last years of the 19th century that this world was being watched keenly and closely by intelligences greater than man's. Microorganisms, which cause so much disease and pain on Earth, have never appeared upon Mars. 100 diseases, all the fevers and contagions of human life, consumption, cancers, tumours and such morbidities never entered the scheme of their life. Ultimately, they were slain by the putrefactive and diseased bacteria against which their systems were unprepared. Slain after all man's devices had failed, by the humblest things that God in his wisdom has put upon this earth. By virtue of natural selection of our kind, we have developed resisting power. But there are no bacteria on Mars. And directly these invaders arrived, directly they drank and fed, our microscopic allies began to work their overthrow. By the toll of 1 billion deaths, man has bought his birthright of the Earth, and it is his against all comers. It would still be his were the Martians 10 times as mighty as they are. For neither do men live nor die in vain. The redweed, too, succumbed almost as quickly as it had spread. A cankering disease seized upon it, and it now appears that all terrestrial plants have acquired a resisting power against it.
Hello?
Richard? Richard, are you here?
Catherine!
Oh, Richard!
I never thought I'd see you again.
I thought the same about you. I was afraid you were dead.
Oh, forgive me, Catherine. Please forgive me. I should never have left you.
None of that matters now. Thank mercy you're alive.
How on earth did you get here?
Well, she didn't come alone, old chap.
Warwick, you're here. I've been worrying about you.
I'm relieved to hear it. If it's any consolation, I've been worrying about me, too. Oh, Richard, do excuse me. Allow me to introduce Mrs. George Elphinstone.
Mr. Pearson?
Mrs.
Mrs. Elphinstone, my brother Richard.
I've heard so much about you, sir. Your wife has been quite frantic about your well-being.
I must admit I've despaired for my life on more than one occasion.
I'm afraid I find myself temporarily homeless, Mr. Pearson. Catherine has offered me the use of one of your spare bedrooms.
Of course, of course. I'm afraid you must take us as you find us.
With everything that's happened, it's a miracle the house is still standing. Come along, my dear. I'll show you to your room. Watch your step.
Warwick, you and Mrs. Elphinstone...
It's early days, brother. She's only just found out she's a widow. Although, to be honest, we've both had our suspicions for some time. But we live in hope.
I fear that not nearly enough attention is being given to the possibility of another attack from Mars, whether it comes tomorrow or in 100 years. It may be that the destruction of the Martians is only a reprieve. To them, and not to us, perhaps, is the future ordained. Whether we expect another invasion or not, our views of the human future must be greatly modified by these events. We have learnt now that we cannot regard this planet as being fenced in and a secure abiding place for man. We can never anticipate the unseen good or evil that may come upon us suddenly. This invasion has robbed us of that serene confidence in the future which is the most fruitful source of decadence. Before the cylinder fell, there was a general persuasion that through all the depths of space no life existed beyond the petty surface of our minute sphere. I must confess the stress and danger of the time have left an abiding sense of doubt and insecurity in my mind. I sit in my study, and suddenly I see again the healing valley below set with writhing flames, and feel the house about me empty and desolate. I go to London and see the busy multitudes in Fleet Street and the Strand, and it comes across my mind that they are but the ghosts of the past, haunting the streets that I have seen silent and wretched, phantasms in a dead city, the mockery of life in a galvanized body. Strange, too, it is to stand on Primrose Hill, to see the people walking to and fro about the Martian machine that stands there still, and to recall the time when I saw it, under the dawn of that last great day.
The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells, starring David Ault as Richard Pearson, Fred Robbins as Essex, and J.T. Turner as the Reverend. Featured were Joseph Zamparelli as Professor Ogilvy, Shana Dirick as Catherine Pearson and Mrs. Elphinstone, Robin Gabrielli as Warwick Pearson, Jackie Coco as Mrs. Wayne, Mark Thurner as the Lieutenant, Dan Powell as the Ship Captain, and the Martian vocals were by Seth Adam Scher. Tonight's play was dramatized for audio by M.J. Elliott, based on the book by H.G. Wells. Executive producer Mark Vandenberg. Music by Jeffrey Gage. Produced by Seth Adam Scher. And directed by yours truly. For the Colonial Radio Theater on the air, this is Jerry Robbins. This has been a production of the Colonial Radio Theater on the air.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.